Hello and welcome to Searching for Service, brought to you by Rotary District 5950. I'm your host, Kelly Kirk.
We are her co-hosts, Joe Kirk
and Chad Larson.
I was like, where are you going with this? Before we share who our guest is for today's episode, Joe's going to remind us of our show's purpose.
Yeah, here at Searching for Service, we are committed to highlighting and uniting servants through stories of service. And what we mean by that is we have great people on. They tell a lot of great stories, a lot of great opportunities to serve, get excited. And we don't really care how you serve as long as you serve. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we think Rotary is the best vehicle for that. But, you know, get out there and serve.
Yeah. And so speaking of servants, of service, we had Natasha Grad on. And she is the president of Rotaract Club for Dakota County Technical College. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, she was great. Super,
really
great. Super
really
inspiring.
Good about mental health and her journey.
Yeah. So stay tuned.
Yep. You guys will enjoy it.
I'm Kelly Kirk.
I'm Joe Kirk.
And I'm Chad Larson.
We'll be back.
Rotary is a place for all community-minded people who want to serve their areas with the support of an international organization. Join Rotary to find service. Join Rotary to find inclusion. Join Rotary to find leadership. Join Rotary to find fun. Join Rotary to find friendship. Join Rotary to find a better version of the world. Find a Rotary Club near you at Rotary.org and click on Club Finder. There is a club out there for everyone. Find your fit with Rotary. Rotary.org.
Up your game and show off your Rotary Club spirit. Did you know there's a one-stop shop for all things Rotary apparel? Russell Hampton Company is the world's largest provider of licensed Rotary branded merchandise. From apparel like hats, jackets, and shirts to banners, tents, and awards, they have it all. And most things are customizable. And they can handle orders of all sizes. Russell Hampton Company also has deep connections to Rotary. In 1920, the company founder was part of Rotary Club No. 1 in downtown Chicago. Russell Hampton Company models their business on the Rotary four-way test and gives back 10% of all purchases to Rotary, supporting its global work. So the next time you and your club are out on a service project, arrive with the right swag from Russell Hampton Company to promote your club and Rotary. Even non-Rotarians will want some of your cool hats, shirts, and jackets. Learn more at bestclubsupplies.com. That's bestclubsupplies.com.
Of the things we think, say, or do.
Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it be a good will and better fresh air? Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it be beneficial to all concerned?
Join Rotary to serve your community and the world with honesty, fairness, and goodwill. Our four-way test guides our actions every day. Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? Will it be beneficial to all concerned? These values underpin our commitment to making a positive impact on the world. Learn more about your local Rotary Club and stop searching and start serving. And the song you're hearing now was performed by Rotary Club of Dar es Salaam, Oyster Bay.
Hello, and welcome back to Searching for Service, brought to you by Rotary District 5950. I'm Kelly Kirk.
I'm Joe Kirk.
And I'm Chad Larson.
And before we introduce our in-person guest, Chad is going to remind us of our show's sponsor.
Well, you want to thank Russell Hampton for sponsoring us. They are the number one printer for Rotary in the country. You can check out, if you're watching, some of the swag they have printed for us. We got mugs, cutting board, hat, you name it.
Pretty much anything you can slap your logo on.
Or Rotaries, they're there for you. So look them up at russellhampton.com.
And we're always in the market for additional sponsors for the show. So if the show compels you to do so, reach out to us at searchingforserviceshow@gmail.com.
There you go.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Well, it's always nice to have a guest in person here at the studio. So we want to welcome Natasha Grad. She is the president of the Rotaract Club for Dakota County Technical College. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. This is cool in person as well. So yeah.
We are happy to have you. So really, we want our listeners to have the opportunity to get to know you as a guest. So I'm going to ask the first question. I usually do. Where are you from?
So I'm actually from Eagan, Minnesota.
Okay.
Grew up there, went to Eagan High School, and then actually graduated from a cool school that's on the Minnesota Zoo property. Ooh. If you've ever heard of it, it's called the School of Environmental Studies. And it's focused just on the environment, education-wise. So
clever name, then.
Yeah, it fits very well. Didn't have to do regular gym. I got scuba certified as a gym credit. And I also went up to the Boundary Waters in the middle of February, which was actually really cool.
Yeah. Okay.
And also May.
And cold.
It was cold, but it was the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced.
Really?
It was totally worth it.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't have to do track.
Okay.
I went on cool adventures instead for my gym credits.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's fascinating and something I've never heard of that before. So.
Oh.
They didn't have that in Wisconsin?
Oh, no. I don't believe so. Or maybe they did and I just wasn't.
You didn't have like the couple dozen people that just showed up at graduation? You're like, I've never seen you before? Because did you graduate technically from Eagan?
Yeah. So Eagan was my home high school, but I didn't walk at Eagan.
Yeah.
I just didn't really feel connected at the time to that school. And so I walked with SES, it's called, or SESers. And it's really cool because we actually have our graduation at the Minnesota Zoo, and we walk across the stage barefoot.
Hmm.
So I graduated barefoot, connected to the earth, and it was a really nice experience. I think there was only like 168 kids.
Only?
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of people listening to this that would go, like, I graduated with 17 people in my class.
My graduating class.
Yeah, my graduating class wasn't much bigger than that.
It was a school that only juniors and seniors were at, and it was 200 kids per year, so they could only hold 400 max. It was kind of intense to get into. But
a lot smaller than Eagan.
Cool. Yeah, oh yeah. I think Eagan graduated with like over 500 students. So
what drove you to do that school alternative versus just going through the regular high school?
So I had a few mental health problems or issues at the school and actually ended up having to kind of drop out because of that.
Sure.
And I don't know, just the learning style was different. I was interested in the environment. I felt more connected to the environment. They went outside. I wasn't stuck inside of a building for 8 hours. I was just really passionate. And actually, I ended up gaining a passion for glacier ice. And I originally wanted to pursue an environmental science degree and study just glacier ice because they had a program where you'd go up to the Arctic for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And since I'm scuba certified,
yeah,
I'd be able to like collect ice samples and scuba dive in the Arctic. And then I was going to minor in photography.
Okay.
But, you know, there's no job security in that right now.
Yeah.
So. That's incredible.
Like, yeah,
it is. Like,
I'm still scuba diving in the Arctic.
Well, I think what's
not
really
on the bucket
cool
list, Chad,
about it, Natasha, is that it's kind of shedding light to the fact that there's always alternative options.
Yeah,
no matter
for sure.
What, you can always pivot one way or the other, and there's going to be something for you to do. So,
we'll get into more of the mental health aspects a little bit later in the interview. But, you know, what kind of drove you to explore that? Like, I find this kind of actually really fascinating.
Explore the SES school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just the way they did everything. So instead of like having 50-minute period classes, they're like 3 hours. And you're in a room with 100 students, and it was more like college. So we didn't have to, like, raise our hand to go to the bathroom. It was more of a lecture-based, and it was more on philosophical types of education. Like, my whole senior year was based on the question, how then shall we live? Mm. And that was my final. You know, I ended up having to write a toxicology report that was, like, 44 pages long on DDT and infertility. I had to do, like, a project where it would last longer than me and kind of, like, an end-of-the-year project, which I did reverse graffiti, which is really cool if you've ever heard about it.
No.
let's just pivot into that.
Sure. So reverse graffiti is really cool, and sometimes it actually looks like actual graffiti, and so cities will paint over it, which is kind of ironic. But what happens is they take a stencil and they power wash inside the stencil, and then remove it from the wall or the sidewalk or whatever, and it leaves an image because they cleaned off the dirt, the grime that was collected over the years.
Okay.
So not only does it show how dirty the world is from us, but it also it's a way to do artwork and kind of do something that's not as invasive with paint. They also do it with like a mixture of sometimes you'll see like murals done where it'll be greenery and almost looks like a plant is growing in a wall. They'll use that as well as like a paste to paste to the wall and create an image that way. So, yeah, that was what that project was on. And then we had to write an ethics paper that we wrote when we first got there and then write a reflection on that ethics paper and see how our ethics changed environmentally. Yeah, it was really impactful.
Yeah, I love the thinking behind it. It requires you to challenge your own beliefs and the way that you the way that you perceive the world, and that there's more than one option. And
we covered challenging topics that you wouldn't see in a normal high school. I mean, I had to study different religions when we had conversations about different religions and how that environmentally impacts everybody. Mm-hmm. We talked about, you know, the overpopulation of the world and, you know, what should we do about that? You know, what is ethically correct in order to do population control, and looked at all the history of that.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so you have these, you know, 17, 18-year-olds discussing these really intense, high-topic questions, and I just feel like it really propelled me to kind of think larger than just my little community and really pushed me to be a little bit farther and say, hey, look, I can do this. Like, what's stopping me, you know?
That's cool.
I am a little like mind blown right now, to be honest with you. So it's
kind of a little different direction.
No, it's okay.
This is the cool thing about the show. We go wherever we want.
Right. Yeah. It's challenging my thought process. And since like, you know, I'm pretty far removed from the high school scene, but you know, you still have the narrative that's in place on like this and then this and then this.
Yeah.
Then
what
this.
You're supposed to do. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, while everyone was learning, you know, American history and stuff, I was learning how to survive in the winter. I was learning how to build fires, build shelter, how to identify plants.
So when the zombie apocalypse comes, we're calling
we
you.
Give me a call. Need to connect with you.
We're going to go scuba diving with
them. Become your best friend. Yes.
We will live underwater. It's fine.
I know when we talked off air, so you also have, for most of your life, participated in pageants, right?
Yeah, I have. I've been doing pageants for over 15 years.
Cool.
Which is really cool. And I'm not the stereotypical pageant person, as I have a huge tomboy side to me, which is why I was put into pageantry in my own personal life. Like, I drive a really cool sports car.
Nice.
It's a Nissan 350Z convertible, 6-speed.
Okay.
I've got a couple motorcycles, you know, just kind of like those stereotypical things you would not
imagine.
Not gonna,
one's not enough for you?
Like, no. Yeah. I have like a CBR sports bike, but then I also have a Honda Grom, which is kind of more like a little pit bike.
Okay.
It's just kind of fun to...
For our listeners who are not actually like... here in studio to physically see Natasha, when she walked in, my first thing that I noticed were her shoes, which are high heels, and they're sparkly. So when you're hearing all of this, it's like it challenges.
And
again, they're
pink. And I drove here. I just want everyone to know, I drove stick here in these shoes. So it is possible.
That's awesome. It's awesome. Okay, but so back to the pageantry.
You know, when I was a child growing up, I was a huge tomboy. And my grandmother, bless her heart, was like, Natasha, you need to start acting more ladylike. You're getting older. You know, I'm going into middle school. You need to start, you know, acting like a lady. You're going to be a young woman soon. you know, we need to start working on your manners. And so my grandmother signed me up for the local Miss Egan pageant.
Nice.
Was the first time I was wearing heels, first time in really a dress. I tripped going up the stairs onto the stage.
My gosh.
It was like the worst thing I could think of. I was really shy. I never really interacted with other women in my life because it just made me uncomfortable for some reason. I guess maybe I wasn't into the same things they were. I tended to hang out with more men, more boys. And so I did the whole program. Which actually was really funny, and I didn't realize until I started doing Rotaract and Rotary events that the Egan Rotary was actually part of a sponsor for Miss Egan back when I originally did the pageant.
Interesting.
Yeah, crazy how life does that.
Yeah. coming full circle at you.
Yeah, so I ended up winning the queen title for my age division. Don't know how that happened. And then all of a sudden, my next year was a whirlwind of going to multiple different events around the Twin Cities metro. Okay. Parades, coronations, volunteer events. I got to meet so many people. It forced me to, you know, go up to a strange group of women, you know, young mm-hmm. girls, and introduce myself and start a conversation. So it really forced me to get out of my shell and start to be a little bit more not shy and maybe a little bit more ladylike. Yeah, and it was a great experience. I kind of have a funny story with that. So I don't know why. They gave us all white dresses, evening gowns. And I love food. And so there would always be food.
I'm like, I know where this is going.
There would always be food at these coronation events. And like the worst type of food. I'm talking like little
spaghetti. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, I always kept spilling everything. So my director actually ended up making me a bib that we would nice. Carry around with us. So whenever we'd eat somewhere or whatever, I would have my royal bib on to cover the white dress. And I never wore a white dress again
my gosh.
For that reason. But yeah, so I, you know, I ended up
I don't wear white shirts either.
You're so funny.
I don't.
Anyways, proceed.
Yeah, so I ended up falling in love with the year of service that comes with the crown.
Okay.
And I was hooked after that. I tortured myself and put myself through the pageant portion in order to get that year of service. Mm. And throughout the years, you know, I kept doing it. I ended up being Miss Egan my senior year of high school, which was a really cool experience. And then afterwards, I was like, what's next? And a lot of the ambassador programs around here, they kind of end once you're done with your, you know, grade school, high school. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know where to go. And so I found out that there's actually state and national pageants out there. So I was like, you know what? If we're going to do this, let's do this, right? So I went the state national route. And after I made that decision, I did it in the honor of my grandmother. So yeah, now I always feel like she's on stage with me and probably That's very so proud to see how much more ladylike I am.
Yeah.
Not fully,
though,
but
you're keeping those ties to the tomboy.
Keeping those ties.
I
can never get rid of it. But yeah, so
out on stage in your Honda.
Yeah. Yep.
It's definitely a talking
she's
point.
She's representing.
But because of that, I've held 5 Miss Minnesota titles. I've held 2 national titles. The most recent, I was the national Miss for American Royal Beauties for 2022. And having those opportunities led me to creating a platform of something I'm very passionate about, which is helping to educate and end the stigma against severe mental illness. Mm. So that's been a very big passion of mine, and that's something that I have dedicated my life to for the past 15 years. And it's something I'm going to be continuing now throughout my life. And it was really cool having that national title because, you know, you're able to do this at a national level. You're able to talk to people nationally, really gain mm-hmm. awareness on an issue like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to just unpack some of this stuff here. First, I want to ask the question, where is this passion deriving from?
Yeah. So the passion for my platform has to do with kind of a personal story to mine. So I've struggled with mental health my entire life. Okay. It's something that wasn't picked up necessarily quick enough, and people around me didn't notice. And so I started self-harming at a young mm-hmm. age. And after I had my first friend die by suicide my freshman year of high school, beginning of my freshman year, that's when I started to take a turn of really great depression. It was also around the time my grandmother passed away, who I was really close to. And, you know, through that time, I was self-harming and nobody noticed. Mm-hmm. Nobody noticed the signs. And so when at school, you know, they brought us into a room and was like, hey, if you are feeling this way, come talk to a counselor. And so I did. And the counselor didn't take my message as serious as it should have been and had informed my parents that it was just for attention, which led me to having my own first attempt my sophomore year of high school.
Okay.
And that led me into, you know, being hospitalized for a little bit, trying to come back into school. And just wasn't able to do it with all the social. I was bullied my entire life. And so being around those people and kind of in that same environment where I associated all these negative emotions just made it really difficult to cope. So I ended up having to drop out of high school, which was really detrimental to me because education is a huge thing for me. And with, you know, my mental illness declining, I was going from an A student to failing all of my classes. So there were signs and symptoms out there, but, you know, at the time, it wasn't really talked about.
No.
People didn't really know. You know, I'm a little bit older. I graduated high school in 2013. So, you know, this is happening 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. My parents grew up in an era where mental health wasn't really talked about. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of brushed under the table. We deal with our issues ourselves and we don't talk about it. And so, yeah, after my first attempt, you know, it kind of spooked my parents a bit.
All of a sudden, it resonated a little bit more.
Like, where did this come from?
Woke them up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so then it led to a really long recovery, where I was originally diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and was told that I'll grow out of it. Mm. So that gave me hope. Like, hey, I'm going to become an adult. Everything's going to be fine. I'm going to be normal. It's fine. But at the time, I'm wondering, okay, like, why am I having these thoughts? Why am I wanting to hurt myself? Why do I hear things? Why do I have auditory hallucinations? Like, what is going on? It can't just be depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
And so then I had my second attempt, my junior year of high school, and ended up for a little bit leaving SES and going to a special school for therapy. Or it was therapy for most of the day and then school. Well, that kind of came to bite me in the butt later because I was going to an environmental school and they did not know how to teach that.
Yeah.
So I ended up having to do night school my senior year of high school. And thankfully I was able to graduate on time.
Wow.
Took a lot of work from my end, but I was determined and I did it. And then I had my third attempt when I was about 20. And that's when I finally got put into the adult system, right? Because during this time, you know, my mom's even asking the doctors, like, what can we do for her to stop, like, cutting herself? What can we do for her to stop harming herself? And they just look at me and say, well, just don't cut. Yeah. What are you going to, like, there's nothing you can do with that. And so I finally got into an adult program where they looked at me and said, you don't have depression. And I was like, what are you talking about? Obviously, I have depression. Like, I've attempted suicide. What are you talking about? And I was then properly diagnosed with what I have now and was informed that I have what's called borderline personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have bipolar disorder, CPTSD, and anxiety. And then they threw in seasonal depression because, you know, we live in Minnesota. So, and you know, and when I got
just to feel welcome with everybody
of course,
else, right?
You know, it's everyone else here has it. It was just kind of thrown in at the end, just a little kick. So it was kind of like, what is this? You know, I've heard of bipolar, but I had a stigma against it, right?
Yeah.
You know, oh my gosh, those people are scary. They're violent. Nobody wants to be with those people. And what is this borderline personality disorder? What is BPD? So I did my own research, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bad mistake. Should have never done that. And I just saw all this negative stuff online, this very big stigma around people, especially with borderline. And borderline ended up being kind of like the main mental illness that shows itself more in my life. Mm-hmm. I got diagnosed with bipolar because I experience intense mania and depressive episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, well, the things that people are saying is, you know, you can't love somebody with BPD. You know, they're very draining. They're just going to destroy your life and kick you to the curb. And the things I was reading, it was like making me feel like I'm unlovable you know, I'm not going to be able to accomplish anything in my life. And I looked at my life and said, well, that's not possible. Like, look at everything I've been doing so far, you know, and so I wanted to change the stigma, right? I wanted to educate people. And before this, my platform was just strictly about mental health, you know, like raising awareness. I've lost multiple friends to suicide. Most recently, just this past December, I ended up having a friend die by suicide. So it's a very active, it's a very continuous thing. And not only my life, but other people, you know, just being in a room of strangers, at least one person has known somebody or has mm-hmm. been associated with someone who has died by suicide.
Yeah.
And so originally it was just to get that message out there. But now with my new diagnosis, I added to end the stigma against severe mental illness because, you know, I started to be more open with people about it and had lost some friends, you know, yeah. had lost some people in my lives because of my diagnosis.
Sure.
And it led into a lot of therapy. You know, I tried to do certain routes, certain medication. It's very difficult to figure out what medication works. And
I'm
still even struggling with medication and trying to be on it for a long enough time for it to actually make effect. And mm-hmm. It's called med management. And so it's just been kind of a crazy journey. But now, you know, even though I still struggle, right, I still sometimes have those thoughts. Mm-hmm. I still sometimes do harm myself. Not that I want to, but, you know, sometimes you slip up. It's kind of like an addiction, you know.
Yeah.
It happens. I just have to be gentle with myself, and I make sure I have the resources around me. I'm in therapy twice a week. I do a group dialect behavioral therapy on Mondays. And then I see an individual therapist on Wednesdays and also have the support and kind of that team and a safety plan in place for when I am having like what I call an episode or mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, really there. I'm when that happens, your mind kind of goes to a different mm-hmm. area and you're not yourself. Yeah. And I sometimes don't even remember what happened.
Sure.
So, you know, something I want to hit on is when you were telling your story here, something that you said that really stuck with me was when you were able to almost like watch yourself and then go, well, that's not the, and you kind of contextualized it with a lot of the stigma that you saw, mm-hmm. you know, doing your own research, and you were like, well, that's not my life. That's not how did you get there? Because I could see it so easily being like, see, this is why I'm feeling all of this. Of course, I can't do anything. But like, mm-hmm. what got you to where you could look at your situation from an objective standpoint instead of being so locked into it? Because that's got to be something that is difficult to
do. It is, and it's still something I struggle with every day. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not quite sure where it came from. You know, I think it was more. I looked at myself and I'm a very kind person. I'm a very giving person. I love others first before myself. My mom raised me to be very kind. Growing up, my mom was disabled. And so I was already introduced to that world and, you know, be nice to people. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know what their life is like. And so I was always wanting to help other people. I was always, you know, volunteerism was a very big thing for me. And after joining pageants and seeing like the difference I can make in my community, even as like a 12, 13-year-old girl, it was just something that I kind of held on to and grasped and said, hey, like, I'm extremely kind to people. I'm very nice. I love people. And I do all this volunteer work. I do make the world a better place somehow, you know, so I can't be all bad.
Interesting.
Yeah. Were you going to ask a question, Jen?
No.
Okay. So our current Rotary International president, Gordon, are you aware of what his like mission is?
I am not. No.
So
I hate to say that.
Mental health
health. So, I mean, if you haven't learned a little bit about that, it certainly is a great opportunity to just kind of help connect the dots.
Yeah.
So I guess it actually answers my question if that was some sort of like tie to that as well.
Oh, but, like why she joined Rotary Rotaract?
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to explain why I joined?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, of course.
Because obviously it's not that.
No, that just happens to be a coincidence, actually, which is really great to hear and see that, you know, other organizations have that same passion or other people have that same drive and passion that I mm-hmm. do. Because what I've done on my own has been kind of difficult. You know, I've gone out and spoken to adolescents and young adults about my story, mm-hmm. The signs and symptoms. I spoke with parents, you know, like what it looks like or, you know, how do you deal with a loved one who may be experiencing severe mental illness? And also just kind of introducing them to someone, hey, you know, have a conversation like we are now. Mm-hmm. And then I spill the beans, right? And tell them, hey, look, I have all of this. And a lot of times they're shocked. They don't believe me.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I don't get it. You're so normal. You can juggle so many things. You seem like you have a normal lifestyle. And I always tell them, yes, yeah, you know, from the outside I do, but you don't mm-hmm. see me at home. You don't see the struggles I have daily. Yeah. You know, you don't see the extra steps it took me to get where I am. You know, it takes me like three times more work to be able to do what the average person is doing. Mm-hmm. And so I found out about Rotaract because I went to college for the third time and ended up going for photography. And I chose the best time because it was right before COVID happened.
Yeah.
And so, you know, second semester, I'm going full time. Never thought I'd be able to do school full time because I, at the time, was never able to hold a full time job. So full time school was kind of challenging for me. And then lockdown happened and I'm supposed to be taking pictures of people and, you know, doing that. So the program got, you know, paused for momentarily and I ended up working on a minor in entrepreneurial business. And it led me down a path of digital marketing, which is really cool. And now, you know, I completed my associate's degree, which I never thought I'd be able to actually get a degree anyway. And now I have an associate's in photography and a minor entrepreneurial business. And this spring, I am about to graduate with another associate's in digital marketing.
Very nice.
And so my last year of college, you know, with COVID happening and things slowly starting to open up, this past year has kind of been really the first year that we've been fully, fully open, right? Things have kind of gone back to normal. We still have like online programs, like my digital marketing program is strictly just online. But I wanted to get active in school. So I do way too many things now. I'm the campus liaison for the Student Senate.
You keep yourself busy.
There I do. Well, I have a saying, I'm too busy to be sad. but yes, so I do that. One of my friends, really good friends, Alexis, that I met through school, introduced me to Brett, my advisor, and said, hey, look at Rotary. Like, they volunteer, they do a lot. And she knew about my background with pageants. And mm-hmm. at the time, I had just passed my national title. And I was like, I kind of need a break from pageants. I need, you know, I need a break, kind of figure out what my next steps are, where I want to go. And got introduced to Rotaract. And it was kind of that outlet for me to still have that volunteer outlet without having to have a title and that pressure of an added thing while I'm trying to just finish my education. Mm-hmm. So I was introduced to that, you know, ended up learning kind of about what the club at the school does. And, you know, I'm the kind of person that if I'm going to do something, I'm going to fully do it. So I was like, you know what? Let's just go for it. Let's run for the president position.
Nice.
And I ended up getting
You sound like a lot of Rotarians.
And I've done that with a lot of other things. Other things on campus. You know, I'm part of the Alumni Foundation board now. I'll be staying on that after I graduate. I'm the president for the Minnesota State Chapter for Business Professionals of America. You know, I'm on the executive board for Pi Theta Kappa, which is our honor roll society. I do social media for them. Also help do some social media at the school. So very, very, very involved. I've always lived a very busy schedule. And so now that pageants weren't a thing, I wasn't having, you know, 10 appearances a week anymore. I needed to fill my free time with something else. And I ended up really like getting to know Brett and getting to know kind of his passions and told him about my platform. And he was like super supportive and I just hit the ground running. And I think this is like the most active our club has actually been at the school. We do a minimum of one volunteer event a month. Okay. I mean, even just this past week, Monday, I went to the press release of Rotary International being here. Super cool.
Yes.
Got to experience that. Tuesday night, we did a Feed My Starving Children at a mobile pack, which was super cool. It was at a church in Lakeville. And then Wednesday morning, we went to, with Rosemount Rotary, they held kind of an informational session about fentanyl and the experiences that our state is having with it. So, and then now I have this today. So like my whole week has been full of just Rotary events. If that kind of gives you a taste of how active we've been as a club.
Yeah.
That's how I got involved in Rotaract. And now, you know, I really enjoy it. And I see it's something that after I graduate, I want to pursue and I want to get into a Rotary. And once again, I'm going to run for president. So
the Edina Morningside is always taking new members.
Okay.
In case you were wondering.
But there are many wonderful clubs.
Yes, there are. Yes. And perhaps you choose it based on the
specific
location.
As long as it's in District 5950.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
And I'm taking a peek at the time, too. So I'm going to be cognizant of that. Yeah. But first, with pageantry.
Yeah.
There has, like, my grandmother took me to a lot of pageants in the small, small town of La Crosse, Wisconsin. Okay. So I'm familiar with mm-hmm. what that process looks like. But, there, you know, you're being based off of physical appearances and stuff.
Yeah.
For the most part. And then there's other components of it, too. There truly are. But there has got to be so much mental health around that and just challenges that most of the gals encounter.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Some of the stuff that you've encountered, other individuals who have been a part of the pageants that you've made friends with that have encountered some of these issues as well.
Yeah. So, great question. Thanks for bringing that up. The stigma, once again, stigma
oh, yeah.
About pageantry. So yes, we are, you know, judged. It's a very intimate thing. You know, you're taking yourself, your personality, your life, your mm-hmm. mission, and you're laying it out on a table or laying it yeah. on a stage and saying, hey, judge me, right? It's
yeah.
very scary. Not the average person can do that.
Right.
And that's kind of something I've leaned into, especially with the struggles I've had, you know, just self-identity with myself and body issues and kind of, you know, not thinking I'm pretty enough or not thinking I'm good enough and stuff like that. It was kind of something I leaned into, which was kind of like a physical proof to me, like, hey, obviously, I'm beautiful. I have a crown, mm-hmm. you know? Obviously, other
yeah.
people find me interesting. Other people like me. So it was
yeah.
kind of that confidence builder, that kind of outward look showed me, like, hey, look, like the thoughts that you're having aren't correct about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it is scary, especially, you know, being a plus-size woman in the industry of pageantry. I compete against straight-size women. I compete against mm-hmm. size 2. You know, and I still even win at the size I'm at. And so something they do, which I think is really cool, that not a lot of people know about is when they're judging you, right? Like during evening wear, they're judging you on your looks.
Yeah.
They're really judging, how does that dress fit your body shape? How does that color complement your skin tone? How does the way your hair styled or the makeup choice that you chose complement you and your features? You know, and so you really need to know your body. You need to really know what looks good on you, what doesn't,
yeah.
trying out those different things. And so they're really judging you individually based on you, who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, they just add up all the numbers.
Okay.
One of the biggest parts of the competition, which a lot of people don't know about, but the number one part is interview. That's usually 50% of, you know, the total score. And that's where they really get to know you. It's like a 4-minute thing. Sometimes it's a panel interview. Sometimes it's a table intimate interview. Panels are my favorite. But then I don't have to repeat myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but then they're able to answer those intense questions. And especially with me, you know, being in an older age and the kind of platform I have, sometimes that can get really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got 4 minutes to tell my story. I've got 4 minutes yeah. to tell them, you know, why I want this national title and what I'm going to do with it, right?
Yeah.
Show them my business plan for the year, because that's what it really is.
Yeah.
You know, you're given this opportunity. You're really being the face of this organization.
Sure.
What are you going to do with that opportunity? And so a lot of it is more mental and kind of how you hold yourself. Are you confident on stage? You know, are you giving eye contact? Do you look and feel like someone that's comfortable in their own body? And so that's kind of been what's helped me gain confidence in myself. And I've had some people say, you know, that's a very superficial way to gain confidence, Natasha. And yeah, I mean,
yeah.
maybe a little bit,
yeah.
you know, but when I'm having those really hard days and I look up on my bookshelf and I see my crowns up there, It's what pushes me forward. You know, when I have that dirty sash that's brown now and it's not white anymore because of all the work I've put into that year, it's really visible and the memories. And then I've also, what's really cool about pageantry is it led me down a really cool direction that I never thought I'd ever do. And I was able to walk in New York Fashion Week. And I have actually walked in New York Fashion Week four separate times. And I was part of the first ever completely plus size fashion show for New York Fashion Week.
Wow.
So once again, able to end those stigmas, you know, break those barriers and have that kind of crazy experience. Like, who gets to say that they've, you know, done that? I've had photo shoots in the middle of Times Square at both like noon and 1 a.m. And, you know, having those memories and being able to like show somebody like, hey, look, like this is a picture of me in Times Square. Or this is a picture of me in front of the Empire State Building. And it's just very random. But
the experiences, right?
Yeah.
But I do just want to point out the fact that like you have those hard days, right? And then you take a look at the memories that have been created and all of what has gone into getting to that point.
Literally the blood, sweat, and tears and the dedication, not only to my life, but, you know, other people's lives I've done and my platform and the passions I have. It's kind of what really fuels me when I'm having those stuff. Of course, you know, sometimes I need my cat or, you know, somebody else to help remind me of those things. But it's just kind of nice to have that in the background.
I had another question, but I was so enthralled with the fact that you got to go to New York Fashion Week that I completely forgot.
Yeah. Something I do want to talk about, and this is something that's really interesting, is, you know, the more I get to know people and the better and the more interesting the person is, the more hell they've been through.
Yeah.
Like truly. And it's like there's something to, and I've asked myself many times, like, why is that?
Yeah.
And there's something to that wrestling with demons all the time, like with your inner demons or whatever demons in your life that you're going through, and being able to smile on the other end of it and being able to learn something from it, or to, you know, gather whatever you need to keep going and keep pursuing your vision or your goals. Is that seems to be kind of the secret sauce of really successful people.
Well, you know, ignorance is bliss.
100%. It goes back to, you know, you got to struggle in life to get anywhere. You don't get anywhere by not struggling.
Well, and not only that, but it creates resilience, right? Yeah. You know, I'm not afraid to hear the word no. I've been on stage and never got picked for anything. Yeah. You know, I've gone through these things. I've put myself through these troubles, and also I've experienced, you know, multiple different things that have happened to me where people are like, I can't believe that's happened to you. You know, I'm a person of sexual assault, and it's happened more than once. You know, things like that where it's trying to take a bad situation that's happened in your life or something like that and trying to find the silver lining, right? Trying to find the good that can come out of that. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like it just kind of, I don't want to say builds character, but it creates that resiliency and it kind of creates you to be able to be more compassionate with others, right? Because I understand. I understand what someone might be feeling, or I understand what that situation is like. I'm able to connect more with that person. I'm able to make more deeper connections, more impactful, meaningful connections with someone.
Compassion was the word that came to my mind, too. So I'm
which
glad
is important
that.
In this world because, you know, we're so involved in our own technology and our own lives that sometimes we forget that other people exist and they also have feelings and they also experience things that we don't know about in our daily lives. And they also might be having a hard time, but we don't see that because it's private and it's behind closed doors.
Well, and it's also probably core to why you serve.
Exactly.
Yeah. So to kind of bring it full circle for the show and for, you know, what this show is all about. And it was a really wonderful interview. And thank you so much for
sharing. Oh, okay. Well, we breezed past that you know, talk to people and share.
Yeah.
How they can help people in their lives or resources. So I would say, what would you say to the audience, or whether they have somebody in their family, whether they're going through things, is there resources or, you know, I know you just question. Briefly breezed over it, and but I'd like to.
Yeah. So there's actually a lot of resources out there, and then within the last 10 years, or even 15 years, it's gotten a lot better. You know, there's the 988 hotline that not only Minnesota but nationally we have now, which is kind of the new 911, right? You know, if you yourself are experiencing a mental health crisis, or you know somebody that is experiencing a mental health crisis, you can call and text that number. Mm-hmm. Someone will respond. And you know, people are concerned, you know, well, what qualifies as a mental health crisis, right? Yeah. You know, it doesn't have to be super severe. No, you don't have to be, you know, on the verge of about to commit suicide. It could even just be depressed, sad, you know, not wanting to continue with life, not feeling the motivation anymore. So that's a nice resource. We also have a lot of really good programs here, like NAMI or American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. They do a lot in the community just to help raise awareness. There's a really cool event that I like to go to. It's called Out of the Darkness Walk. It happens in September every year around Como Park, and they just help fundraise money, kind of gain awareness.
Of that, yeah.
Yeah, and they do a nice walk around a lake, and and it's really cool because they hand out beads based on like your story, right? And so it's a way to see other people without talking to them, but see how they're associated. Some people, it's, you know, I've just lost a friend, or I myself have attempted, and it's just really nice. They also have a lot of support groups around. And then I know in like our counties, I know Dakota County just had a really big deal with that. They're really putting in a lot of money on mental health crisis. Dakota County specifically, I just know more about it because that's where I live. They have a mental health crisis team where you can call someone and they can come out to your house. No questions asked, you know, no fee or anything, and have that immediate help. They also can do it over the phone. And I've taken advantage of that. You know, I've had someone come to my house before. I've called somebody on the phone and worked through a problem, and they've been that person that's kind of helped me get back to zero, right? Sure. On whatever extreme I'm at. And it's kind of nice to have a professional come in. And as much as I appreciate the police and everything, sometimes they're not properly trained or they don't know how to handle that situation.
Yeah.
Another thing you can individually do is they have some trainings, right? One of the trainings I went through is called Mental Health First Aid. It's an Australian thing that they're trying to bring to America. So it's very vastly new. And I've been certified for a year. It lasts for 3 years. But it kind of goes talking about like, what are the signs of seeing someone who's having a mental health crisis? What do you do, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of informing people that don't be afraid to ask somebody, look at them in the face and say, are you thinking of killing yourself? Because there's a very big stigma against that, saying that if you mention suicide to somebody or you ask them those questions, they're more likely to die by suicide, which is not true. Mm. A lot of times they're actually very thankful that you ask them that question, and they'll break down crying, and finally someone notices, right? Finally someone sees the pain I'm experiencing. So I just recommend doing that. And, you know, just check in. Look for those signs. Is someone giving away their things that you're kind of like, this is very personal to you. Why are you all of a sudden not caring? Or they're not caring about school, or they're kind of, you know, they lost their job and they're not really, you know, caring about those things in their life. So you just need to pay attention to the really little details and have those intense conversations. Don't be afraid to say the word suicide. So
I wish we had another hour.
I know.
Well, I'd always love to come back.
You're more than welcome to come back. Natasha, I just want to take a moment to thank you because it's very big and bold of you to come on here. And, you know, we didn't even really go into Rotaract and what you do with them. But I think more importantly, your passion about mental health, I'm glad it was our focus. So thank you.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm really excited for my future. I'm really excited to get into Rotary, and maybe in a couple of years I can come back and talk about all the cool things I've been doing for Rotary in the state of Minnesota.
That sounds wonderful.
I'll put some of the resources in the description. So if anybody's looking for more.
Yeah. And I can always send you some, via email or whatever links and stuff that you need. So
sounds
beautiful.
Good. Well, as a reminder, you are listening to Searching for Service. I'm Kelly Kirk.
I'm Joe Kirk.
And I'm Chad Larson. We'll be back.
For decades, eradicating polio worldwide has been Rotary's cornerstone cause. We are incredibly close to ridding the globe of this virus, but we need everyone's help to get us to the goal. World Polio Day is October 24th. Please consider making a new donation to Polio Plus or increasing your already generous giving. Go to endpolio.org to be a part of this historical eradication of polio. You will help get vaccinations to the most remote parts of our world and help fulfill a promise we made to end polio now. Two drops and it stops.
Show off your Rotary Club spirit with Russell Hampton Company. They're the world's largest provider of licensed Rotary items. They make everything like hats, jackets, shirts, banners, and more. Russell Hampton Company is a fourth-generation family-owned and operated business founded in 1920 by a member of the first-ever Rotary Club in Chicago, Club Number 1. When you call Russell Hampton Company, you get more than just a company. You get a fellow Rotarian-owned business who's there to help. No matter if you're ordering for your entire club or just yourself, no order is too big or too small. Not sure what your club needs? Their team members can help and customize just about anything. They live by the Rotary four-way test. They also give 10% of all purchases back to Rotary to support Rotary's global work. So remember, Russell Hampton Company is your one-stop shop for all things Rotary. Learn more at bestclubsupplies.com. That's bestclubsupplies.com. Russell Hampton Company, Rotarians serving Rotarians.
Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build good? Will it better friendships? Will it be beneficial to all concerned? When we pay it forward, it will be returned.
Join Rotary to serve your community and the world with honesty, fairness, and goodwill. Our four-way test guides our actions every day. Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? Will it be beneficial to all concerned? These values underpin our commitment to making a positive impact on the world. Learn more about your local Rotary Club and stop searching and start serving. And the song you're hearing right now was performed by the Rotary Club of Saskatoon, Natuna in Canada.
When we pay it forward, it will be returned.
Hello and welcome back to Searching for Service, brought to you by Rotary District 5950. I'm Kelly Kirk.
I'm Joe Kirk.
And I'm Chad Larson.
That was an incredible interview.
Ooh,
tough yeah. topic.
Tough topic.
Very brave and bold. And
yeah, I really want to thank Natasha for being willing to speak. And obviously she has a background in speaking mm-hmm. about it. But
Well, and I don't know about you. I mean, I'm sure that we all identified on some level.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Maybe not the same level as she does, but on some level we identify with
it. Well, whether it's mental health and, you know, the different components of that, or it's anxiety or
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
just kind of stepping up.
But I mean, think about all the stuff that she accomplished in spite of that.
Yes.
So that just shows you
and
all
continues
out there.
To. So it was really
work
great.
Your gifts.
Yes. Really great to have Natasha on, and we appreciate her kind of stepping into the, you know, this realm of podcasting with us and speaking on behalf of it. So yeah,
absolutely.
Well, thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in and listening to Natasha. I'm your host, Kelly Kirk.
I'm Joe Kirk.
I'm Chad Larson.
As a reminder, it's time to stop searching
and start serving.
We'll see you next week.
Can't wait.